How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio, Monday, April 5th, 2010, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We got Raw to talk about tonight. We've got Impact to talk about tonight. I watched the ROH pay-per-view, and unfortunately for Impact, I watched that before I watched Impact. And I just want to start off today with Impact, Dave. I watched this show. I couldn't figure out if it was like complete desperation or if they just have given up.
You know what's funny is I when I wrote my review about it, the first thing that came to my mind was it was like this is probably a not a great analogy, but it's not the worst analogy ever. But essentially it's someone who is it felt like the writing was someone who was going through, who went through high school and was trying to impress girls by eating worms.
Okay.
You know, because they're just you know, it was people who were craving attention. Please look at me. I mean, you know, with no substance or anything.
Yes.
And by doing it, it made them only, in the sense that the harder they tried, the more desperate they looked. And I think that was the story of the show, is that, you know, the harder they worked at putting the show together, the more desperate it came off. Because, yeah, when it was over, all I could think of is man, they're just desperate. And, I mean, they are. You know, there's not a question that they are, but it's like it. Some people can you know, be desperate and not have it, like, come off. But, boy, there was no question watching this show.
It's kind of sad because, like, we had RVD and James Storm and for a while, at least, the Machine Guns and Team 3D and... You know, there was some stuff on this, and I mean, the ladder match, I got a lot that I hated about that, but, I mean, the match itself, those guys worked their asses off to have a ladder match, but, I don't know, just this show is such a disaster. It's a complete disaster. And
it was definitely a sad show to watch, and it didn't start out sad. I mean, you know, I thought RVD and James Storm was good. The crowd was really, hyped up for certain segments, including seeing Hulk Hogan, but, you know, Ric Flair's got to get out of the wheelchair. I mean, it was cute for like 2 weeks. It's over. He's got to get out of the wheelchair. It's just stupid now. And yeah, you know, like they got a pay-per-view in 2 weeks. And I mean, my God, when this show was over, did you know any matches? Well, I guess you probably would sort of know that there's a Lethal Lockdown, which they never explain the rules of. You know, for new fans, although I'm sure at this point there aren't.
Which there are none.
Yeah, I know. And and I guess we know where there's AJ and the Pope, and Kurt and Mr. Anderson in a cage match, but when the show was over, it wasn't like I wanted to see any of those matches.
Now, when you say it started out well, it actually started out well after it started out horribly. That Christy Hemme segment.
Oh, but that was like a minute. Yeah, that was ridiculous.
I'm certain that was a rib. I mean, I'm certain.
A rib on who, Christy Hemme?
Me!
Oh.
Or us, or I mean, how can you come out and the first words out of your mouth are, I mean, this was a direct quote, "The rules are simple," she said, and then she went on to explain this.
Oh, yeah, this match with these freaking convoluted rules that nobody would
that
care about.
That had to
understand.
Be a rib. I mean, there's just absolutely no way it could not have been. It was
ridiculous.
Yeah, well,
you know, the worst thing about it is they just, like, you know, I mean, I know that it's, you know, in their minds the belt's only is a prop. But I mean, can you imagine, you know, this is sort of simulated, you know, boxing or MMA or whatever. Can you imagine, like, you know.
We're going to put George St. Pierre's belt in a box.
In a freaking box, exactly. And he doesn't have to lose it. So
no.
What's the point? What's the point of the championship then?
One of you fighters is going to have to strip down and parade around the octagon.
Yeah.
We're going to put one of Brock's dogs in a box that he really loves. And then one of you is going to get just a title shot at any champion you want at any time.
Well, yeah, but guess what? Well, I guess you're right. I guess it is a champion. Is it a title shot, though?
I guess.
They never made it clear. They just said it's a leather and lace match.
Well, she won the title, so I would. I don't know. I don't even know why I'm trying to think about this right here. But yeah, that was the. I mean, I understand it now that the show's over. But when she was on there, I watched it twice. I refused to let myself watch it a third time. I just watched that thing twice. I had absolutely no idea what was going on. I knew a spider was involved. I knew a belt was involved. I knew there was stripping involved. double eliminations, keys. There were five keys to be won on this particular show. So yep. I don't know what movie Russo watched that involved a lot of keys of late, but he's on a new
maybe
kick.
Maybe he got locked out of the house.
maybe his wife threw away his house key or something like that. Who knows?
Right, yeah, so.
Wow. Let's get into this thing. It opened up with that, and then Hogan, Jarrett, and Abyss came out, and the place did just go absolutely nuts for him. And I love Abyss's promos. I think he's a really good promo guy. I actually, in the middle of his promo, thought, you know, this guy deserves better. But then I realized that's almost everybody on this entire show. So Flair comes out with Chelsea and his whole crew. And by the way, they opened up the show with a title. This live program had a title, which was...
They always have a title.
Yeah, but those were taped shows.
They always have a title.
You can at least believe that they taped the show and then titled it afterwards.
Okay.
Here they titled it Advantage Team Flair, which was what was going to happen at the end of this live show. That was pretty astounding right there. So he introduces his team, that sort of thing, and...
That's because they're ahead of the curve.
They are. They are ahead of the curve as far as professional wrestling.
Well, you know Raw also has titles for the show. They just don't tell you.
They don't put them on television.
No, they don't. But they actually do have titles for the show because, and I don't know if they're named before or after the show. But you know, I mean, I guess they probably are before the show because I've seen like the deal where they, you know, where they have like some of their internal stuff.
Yeah.
And there's titles to the show, but yeah, they don't put it on the TV itself.
No. So they. Jarrett basically called Sting into the ring and said he had one question for him, which amazingly was not why Sting why. It was, Steve, why now? And so,
why not? You should talk. How many times have you turned heel?
That should have been his answer, actually, is why not? So there was a brawl.
It's like, why not? Nothing else here makes any sense.
You know, they had a brawl. Flair sent in the troops. Jarrett and RVD made the save. Somehow this led to RVD versus James Storm. They actually had a really fun match. Crowd was into it.
Yes, it was. They deserve better.
Among
people,
yes.
That's what I was thinking throughout this whole match. Is these two guys just deserve better. James Storm is really good.
Yes.
You know what I thought was great was when Flair was introducing his team, and he had no idea that who Robert Roode and James Storm were. I mean, he knew that they were beer money. And because one of them was a cowboy, he thought the other one was a cowboy, too. He has two kick-ass cowboys.
At least he didn't think one was an Indian.
I guess.
So they had a great match, a fun little TV match here. RVD won, split-legged moonsault. And then afterwards, Storm broke a beer bottle over his head, so he got blood in the opening segment. Hardy ran down. Robert Roode ran down. The heels laid out the baby faces. And it was 2 weeks' worth of angles in one segment, but... I'm not going to complain because this was probably, this may have been the best thing on the show.
I thought, you know, when I thought that stuff was very good. You know, it's just basic, you know, stuff. One thing I got to say also in the first brawl, not this one, but the first one, Jeff Hardy looked terrible.
In like, the opening? Oh, yes.
In the opening brawl, I mean,
he looked better than his promos have been, I'll say that.
Yeah, but it's like there's something, I don't know what it is, like, it's like, Is it like when he steps out of WWE, all of a sudden, it's like it takes away all of his working powers? Because he looked like, I mean, he was like...
He realizes it doesn't matter at all here.
Yeah, but there's a difference. It's like, okay, doesn't matter at all means you don't try hard. It wasn't that he wasn't trying. It was that he was terrible. There's a difference. It's like he forgot... how to wrestle or something.
Well, you can in there and put in a little effort, but basically be half-assing it.
But, I mean, his timing and everything was just so ungodly bad. And, I mean, this was a guy who, his timing was almost never bad before.
I don't know.
And it's not like he was in there with guys that were, like, you know, bums. He was in there with guys that, you know, they're good bumpers and their timing's all good. And he looked like a freaking indie guy out there with, you know, real pro wrestlers.
Well, this happened last time.
Yes, I know.
It's not the first time this has happened with this guy.
No, I you know, when Jeff isn't looking good, it's usually not good.
Yeah. We had Christy interviewing Tara, Angelina, ODB, and Hamada about this deal, and Tara had the best line when she said, "This whole thing is a joke. TNA wants ratings. They're doing all this bullshit at my expense." And that is, in fact, the truth. And
no, and the worst part of the whole thing was is that they're not going to get any. It's so bad when they go, we're doing this stunt for ratings, and it's like they don't even get ratings from it.
They've done it, and they've actually got the lowest ratings for those segments that they've bragged about in the past.
At times they have. This time they won't. I can't imagine that women's match being the lowest rated segment on the show, but, we'll see.
We had Homicide and Rob Terry.
Oh, was that brutal.
What a tribute to Chris Canyon this was, with the hard, unprotected chair shot to the head, destroying a chair, busting the guy open hard way. This just pissed me off to an amazing degree.
It pissed me off, too, because it's just, it's one thing to be really bad at what you do. It's another thing to be really ignorant and in power. And this was just, whoever made this call, whoever made this call should be fired. I mean, in this day and age, to do that, in a pro wrestling ring, that's fucking bullshit.
Should be banished from this
business.
No,
I mean, seriously, I don't know whose call it was, but whoever made that call, and scripted that thing, or let it happen, or agented it, or whatever. But whoever did that, I mean, they should be fired from wrestling. I mean, that's incompetence. It can get the company sued, which they're so stupid they don't even realize. If something happened to one of these guys now, based on knowledge that we have, and he goes and sues the company for scripting it, he'd win in a heartbeat. Any jury would see that. Come on, that's just. I mean, I know that they have in their contracts that you can't sue over it. It's in the contract that you can't, but it doesn't matter that it is, because if someone did, and you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
it would no jury in the world could look at that clip and go, like, in this industry, after what happened with Chris Benoit, after what happened with Andrew Martin's brain, that you allowed someone to take a chair shot like that without in 2010. They're just opening themselves up to ridiculous litigation. It's so, aside from the issue of the guy's health, I mean, just the issue of running a business like this, they're so freaking, I mean, it's like, they do a lot of things that are stupid, but this was well beyond.
Didn't they just claim a few weeks ago that they were not allowing these chair shots like WWE?
Did they? I don't know. I know that Ring of Honor, Tyler Black sort of said that.
I could have sworn TNA claimed they weren't doing these anymore, and then Bischoff basically did that that top 10 reasons to watch Impact, and what did he say about chair shots? I don't remember. But
I didn't see the thing. I just sort of heard.
Just
but,
complete bullshit.
Well, the whole show, again, it was a combination of desperation and being out of touch. Well, what are you gonna do?
Then Orlando Jordan came out and poured milk all over himself for a lewd visual, which they immediately cut away from.
Was that milk?
Huh?
Was that milk?
I presume so. I hope so.
I have no idea. I just thought that it was just that
stupid.
That was definitely the kid eating worms. That was where,
Well, the reason it's so stupid is because they're okay, the guy poured milk on himself for like 2 seconds and they cut away. Because apparently they're afraid to pull the trigger on this, but they still want to just kind of do it.
Yeah.
Either do it or don't.
Well, yeah. Whatever. I mean, it doesn't matter either way. It's not like it's a big deal either way, honestly.
We had the tag match. It was Tara, Angelina, ODB, and Hamada against the beautiful people and Daphne. And here is what happened, everyone. If you pin somebody, you and that person were both eliminated.
But you get a key, and the person who's eliminated doesn't get a key.
Yes, the person who got the pinfall or submission got a key. There were four boxes. One had the belt. One had a match of your choosing at any time. One had the stupid spider. And one had a deal saying you had to walk down to the ring and do a striptease. And they were going to be opened up later on. So we had Daphne pin Hamada. We had Velvet pin ODB. Angelina pinned Lacey. I think there was one more here, actually. Oh, Tara pinned
Tara
Madison.
Tara pinned Madison Rain with Widow's Peak.
Yeah. So, there you go. It was what it was. Then we had the Angle Kennedy.
Well, you know what's great about that?
Mm.
We had a freaking elimination during a commercial break.
Oh, yeah, the first one.
No, second one.
What was the second one?
Yeah, second one.
We had Angle and Kennedy. in a ladder match. This match actually started during the commercial break when we're talking about breaks here.
No, it started. This was weird. It started. It started on the air during that 1 minute. That not 1 minute, but that 10 second thing that Spike.
The weird thing
doing.
In between commercials. Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. But then they had another commercial break. Then they came back and they rang the bell for a match that had been on for like 3 minutes.
Yeah.
That was really confusing.
So
they had a hell of a. They worked their ass off.
They did work their ass off, but when this match started, I just sat there and I thought, you know, aside from Kevin Nash, maybe, if I were going to choose two guys in this company that should not be in a ladder match, I would pick the guy with 10 broken necks and the dude whose gimmick is that he gets hurt all the time. And that's the two guys that were in this ladder match. And I don't think anybody was killed, but Kurt
Everybody was fine, but Jesus Christ, Kurt Angle took that one bump. And
Oh my God.
I thought that was curtains.
Yeah.
You know? And I mean, and clearly it was because Mr. Anderson did the slowest climb I've ever seen to give Kurt a chance to recover. I mean, he tried to crotch himself on the top. And you know what's weird? It was weird. It's like, you know, in WWE, how many guys, you know, in these ladder matches, they always have one guy do that crotch shot, you know, off the ladder, and it's usually in the latter stages of the match. These guys do it kind of in the middle, but which is neither here nor there. But the point is, every time I've seen a guy do it, they almost always get it right. And here's Kurt Angle, who's, you know, really one of the best workers in the entire business, you know, probably of all time, honestly. And he, you know, I don't know if they just didn't, you know, have the right whatever it was in the ring, but he overshot that thing. He nearly tore his groin because he landed on the one leg, you know, with the other leg way out there. Then it changed his trajectory, and he goes straight down on the back of his shoulders and the back of his head when he could have, you know, that was really bad. I didn't know if he was going to get up from that. Eventually, you know, after a long time, he gets up, and then he goes and throws a missile drop kick, of all things, as his next move into the ladder. And
Kennedy nearly killed himself taking a bump off the ladder right there.
But one of his feet, like, went through the, like, you know, where the steps are. So he actually missed with one foot, nailed it with the other one, nearly killed himself with a bump falling off of it. You know, then a minute later, he was doing a freaking moonsault onto a ladder.
Yeah.
I mean, it was an amazing performance. It really was it was a great match. But, I mean, yeah, I
can't fault the guys, but watching this match, it was like, here is a company that doesn't give a shit about any of its performers.
No, it's the guys are trying really hard. But you're right. You know, this is the kind of a match that if it's done, well, I shouldn't say that. I mean, I would normally say it should be safe for pay-per-view, but the fact is that, you know, them with the, you know, their pay-per-views are a different priority. So, okay, so you might as well do it on TV. But, Jesus, you know.
No, these are two guys. I stand by this. These are two guys that should not be put in a ladder match because Ken Anderson gets hurt all the time, and you know that if you put Kurt Angle in any match, he's going to go out there and work as hard as he possibly can, and this is too dangerous a match. He almost killed himself like three times here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, hell of a match from these two guys, and now Mr. Anderson, he won a key, and I thought for sure at the end of the show there was going to be a swerve in his key. Open the box with the striptease in it or some such bullshit, but thankfully they...
I'm glad that you came up with that because I'm pretty sure that they didn't, because if they did, they'd have done it for sure.
Well, thank God we did this after the show was over.
Yeah.
Borash interviewed Hogan, and in walks Bubba the Love Sponge. Hogan wanted to know why he was now running with the band, and Bubba said, "I'm having fun with them, and I wasn't having any fun with you." And then Jay Lethal walked in, and this was like a raw Hornswoggle skit, except it was not meant to be funny. And
yeah, it was. It was meant to be funny.
I'll take your word for it.
It was meant to be funny.
Oh, God.
You know.
I don't know. Just
I mean, I didn't really have a problem with it, other than, you know, again, instead of like parroting Randy Savage from 10 years ago in WCW, they're parroting Randy Savage from 20 years ago in WWF.
Yeah. Didn't the Mega Powers explode?
Years ago.
Well,
they exploded in, 1989, right?
Hogan needs to remind Machismo of this.
Yeah.
Morgan did a promo. This was awesome. He's a heel, But now he's the one-man tag team champions, defending the belts all by himself. That's going to be quite a thing to watch.
Well, we'll have to watch how this turns out.
And said he was going to defend the belts next week against the winner of Machine Guns versus Team 3D. He said, bring it on!
Well, since neither team won that match next, does that mean he doesn't have to defend the title?
I guess so.
Okay.
Guess he'll have no opponent next week. They did, in fact, go to a double DQ when the band ran in and beat up both teams. Hall got Saban up for the edge without assistance this week, so that's a plus. They tagged them. It's in 2010, mind you. We had Hogan, or Nash doing a promo on Hogan saying that Hogan was worried about Flair and Bischoff, but that was the least of his concerns. Said they'd been carrying Hogan for 15 years. If Hogan thought they were bad people, they learned everything they learned from Hogan, and then they did the Wolfpack dance. And
that was pretty funny, you know, Kevin Nash saying that you know, he carried Hogan.
Yeah.
I mean, because he's carried a lot of people.
Sure has. He sure has. Pope did an interview, and Desmond walked up, and Desmond said, I don't even know why we're doing this match tonight, because I beat you last week, and I should be going to the pay-per-view, which was a valid point. And Pope said, well, fine, if you beat me tonight, you can have my spot. So that was scheduled for later. We had Doug Williams coming out, did his promo about shitty X-Division acrobats and the greatness of technical wrestling. He demanded we refer to him as Douglas Williams. He had arranged a gauntlet match with Generation Me. He proceeded to beat the blonde one with the Chaos Theory, beat the other one with a guillotine, and then Shannon Moore ran out and cut a promo about how if there was one thing he hated, he said, it was boring-ass wrestlers like Douglas Williams. So that sets up the...
I always like that.
Yeah.
Now, I was very confused because it's exactly how is it supposed to get Doug Williams over as a heel when he cleanly beats two baby faces in a row? And how is it supposed to help them?
I figured that they just long since given up on Generation Me already.
Long since given up? They've only been in the company for a couple weeks.
Well, you know.
God, let's give up on them. Or, you know, they just signed them.
Well, apparently they decided they made a mistake. I don't know.
Apparently? Jeez.
No other explanation for this. Maybe they thought, I don't know, I can't even, I was trying to think of something.
Maybe they thought, now you're way ahead, you know, you're giving way too much credit.
That was some comedy right there. We had Christy interviewing 3D, who challenged the Wolfpack to a match on free TV next week, first time ever.
God.
Why not?
It's going to be brutal.
Yeah. Desmond and the Pope, fun while it lasted, which was like a minute.
It's a two-minute match.
Yeah. Well, it's a minute more than I thought it was. Pope won with the, I will say this was about the greatest code breaker I've ever seen. And AJ attacked the Pope afterwards, knocked him right into one of the HD cameras, which I would bet actually cost more money than Generation Me is going to make this year in TNA. And wiped that thing out completely. Then Abyss ran down, scared AJ. Nigel took the opportunity. And in fact, as promised at the beginning of this live show, the program here, at least at this point, ended with Ric Flair's team having the advantage. So they were right. Then we had the...
I liked that, you know, as far as the way that run-in went and everything like that. It was good, it was heat, you know, it was all right.
It was a build to the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And then finally, it was time for the main event! Unlocking the women's lockboxes. Going up against a John Cena match, by the way. So, Borash told everyone to open their thing up, and Velvet opened hers first. Everybody thought she was going to have to strip, and instead she got the open contract, so the people booed. Tara got her spider. She was more happy about that than getting her title, at least initially.
No, she was happy, and then she figured out she lost her title, and then she was sad. She didn't know the rules. or if she did, she just was just stupid at that moment.
So Angelina got the belt.
That's when Tara got mad.
That's when Tara got mad. And then they told Daphne she had to strip. So she tried to bail. Borash said if she didn't strip, she would be fired immediately. And by the way, she never ended up stripping.
She never stripped, and she wasn't fired.
Yeah. Played some goofy stripper music. She was taken forever. Lacey ran down. She attacked Daphne. She began to strip. And then Angelina and Tara got into a fight over the belt, which pretty much ended the striptease. So not only did they not deliver on the original stipulation, they didn't even deliver on the swerve, which is really saying something. And then Velvet challenged Angelina for next week in a leather and lace match, which was not explained. She said Angelina brings the lace.
Angelina has to wear lace, and Velvet has to wear leather.
What a match.
Yes.
And that was the end of the show.
Yeah.
This was not good.
No.
What's your ratings prediction?
0.7, maybe 0.8.
And Raw?
3.3 or 3.4.
Really, that low?
Yeah, going against the NCAA championship game, that usually is, and it wasn't that great of a Raw show either as far as ratings. I mean, you know, again, you know, they made the big mistake, you know, like they didn't learn from TNA. You know, you don't put the same match out twice. Especially when David Otunga's in it the second time.
I will say 3.5 to 0.6. That's my prediction.
Okay, well, we'll see you tomorrow.
All right, let's talk about Raw. It opened up with Jack Swagger coming out to talk about how he'd won the world title and said he considered cashing it in against Cena, but figured it would be better to cash in against the guy who called himself the best in the world at what he did. Anyway, Cena took exception to this and came out and challenged him to a match and said he was so confident that he could beat him that he would put his own title on the line. And at that point, Orton's music hit. He came out. He said that he beat Swagger last week, and so he wanted a shot at the belt. Miz and the Big Show came out, and I guess Miz was just telling everybody how awesome he was. I'm not quite sure what the point of this part was. But anyway, finally, David Otunga, the Raw guest host, came out, and he announced that tonight it would be Swagger versus Orton, apparently a non-title match, and Miz and Show versus Cena and his partner, the man he'd faced at WrestleMania, Batista. And fans were not happy with that. And then Orton went to give Cena the RKO. Cena shoved him off, gave the RKO to Swagger. It was a neat little spot, and that set up the matches for later on. It's fine, I guess. Otunga? I don't know.
Otunga, not at major league level, that's for sure.
Well, he's certainly a hell of a lot better here than he was once he got in the ring. Sheamus...
He didn't do much in the ring.
No, but...
I mean, he looked green, yeah.
I don't know if, like, I don't even think most people would even notice this, but when you run the ropes, you hit the ropes on your right side, and you lift your right leg up, because you're going to take a step with your right foot as you leave the ropes. David Otunga managed to hit the ropes on his right side and lift his left leg up, which, this is like first week of wrestling school. They tell you not to do this. And I was just...
Maybe not at his wrestling school.
I guess not. I was just aghast when I saw this. Like, this guy is in the Raw main event, and he's running the ropes improperly. It was amazing.
He did look like he was... You know, he may have just been nervous.
I guess.
But I guess stuff like that should just be, like, natural instinct, and that shouldn't be something you'd... You know, there's things you would screw up, and that isn't one of them.
That is absolutely not one of them.
Yeah.
Absolutely not one of them. Sheamus destroyed Kofi Kingston and then cut. He's been cutting some good promos. I thought this was a pretty good promo. He talked about how Shawn had a great career, but it took him 8 years to win his first title. He'd won his in 6 months. Said that he's on his way to having the best first year of anybody in history, but Hunter screwed it up for him. He said he didn't think Hunter had any more great matches left. He wanted to know if Hunter was going to leave on his own or if he was going to have to send him away in a wheelchair. And Hunter ended up coming out. Oh, by the way, the finish was, after the match was over, Sheamus hit Kofi with a pipe, which I guess
that's his new gimmick.
It's his sledgehammer, yeah. And Hunter came down the ramp, got the sledgehammer, beat the crap out of Sheamus. Sheamus ran for his life. Hunter posed, and...
Hunter messed up a monitor.
That's right. The monitor exploded as he was swinging
He hit Jerry Lawler's monitor, and just all these sparks started flying.
This is one strange feud. He beat the man at Mania, and now he sent him packing with his sledgehammer, and I have no idea how this builds to another match.
It just, well, because he hit him with a pipe last week, and now he was looking for revenge.
So they're just going to go back and forth every week?
Because he never got to tell Sean that he loved him.
He couldn't tell him this week?
No, he ruined the moment forever.
How sad.
Kind of like in a movie. You know, like when these scenes happen in a movie, and someone's about to say that, and somehow there's an interruption, the right time never comes again.
Well, maybe at the very end of the movie.
Maybe at the end of this movie, too.
Well, perhaps so. Maryse came out to do commentary for the Divas Red Carpet Dress to Impress Battle Royal.
All I could say is thank God for the commentary, because this match, these women usually have terrible matches. And then you're trying to make them work in tight evening gowns. That was hopeless.
Yeah, especially when it's PG, so if your dress comes up, you have to pull it down.
Which, there was a lot of that.
That was the extent of Eve's selling.
Was constant pulling down dresses.
Pulling her dress back down. The best line in this was Maryse just saying, and I quote, "I'm proud I'm not part of this."
That was great.
It was Kelly, Alicia, Gail, Rosa, Jillian, Katie Lee, the Bellas, and Eve.
And she was ripping on every single one of theirs the outfits. Who was the Bumblebee? That was Alicia Fox, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because she was wearing stripes or something, and then Kelly was wearing like some sort of prom dress or something.
So yeah, but that was a prom dress. Gail was the peacock from NBC.
I don't know. Gail's fashion sense was pretty bad there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know about that.
And then at the end, she announced that Eve Torres had large hips.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. That's like
I couldn't believe they got that out there.
What?
I couldn't believe they said that on the air.
Yeah.
I guess that's a message.
Like, that's like TNA. Didn't she say that she'd have to extend the belt or something if she wanted?
Well.
that's pretty weird.
Yeah. So, Eve won. So it's Maryse versus Eve for the title next week. Eve.
Hopefully not in evening gowns.
Eve got the title by winning an evening gown match, a title shot, so it's only slightly worse than winning it by opening a box.
Yeah, Battle Royal. They never have explained why women's Battle Royals have different rules than men's Battle Royals.
Well, that's because if they said the answer, which is because they're girls, people would get very upset.
But they're powerful and smart and sexy and something else.
Well, they're short.
Whatever word is, right?
They're short, so it's a much farther fall if they go over that top rope to the floor.
No, it's not. It's the exact same distance.
Well, if you're short, it seems like you're falling from farther away.
Does it?
Well, like, I mean, if you jumped off a curb and then you dropped an ant off a curb, I'm sure the ant would feel like he was falling for hours. I don't know. I wasn't a physics major, everybody.
I don't know about this.
So let's move on here. David Otunga promo that we've seen.
Then Rey Mysterio should be like really scared of taking bumps.
He probably should be. David Otunga promo, the same one we've seen about 6,000 times.
Oh, God, I am so... I wanted to, like, shoot my TV watching that thing.
Yeah.
I'm so sick of that segment.
He was backstage. He had an entourage of geeks. Santino showed up. The Midget showed up. This was our slapstick for the evening. The only bit, actually.
It was short enough, and it was funny enough, you know, where... because he kept saying that he was the A-list, I guess that's his nickname, and Santino came in looking for Mr. T because he thought it was an A-team reunion.
Yes.
I thought that was funny.
And one of the goofballs tried to dive over the table onto the Midget and missed, and he crashed and burned, and that was our slapstick, and I laughed at that.
That was pretty funny. But the Midget, meh. Well, I guess he has to be on the show every week, so.
Yeah.
He tried to steal the M&Ms.
Show Miz versus Cena and Big Dave ended pretty much almost immediately. Big Dave just bailed. And Cena went after him. They had a short brawl. Dave ran away. They announced that Cena had been counting out, and Cena was so angry. I don't know why I found that so funny, that he was so angry to be counted out of a tag team match. So Otunga comes out and said that Miz and Show weren't getting off that easy. They were going to defend the titles later. And since Cena and Batista could not get along, Cena's new partner was going to be himself, David Otunga. And I thought, my God, this is your main event. And in fact, it did end up being. Then we had a complete TNA segment here. If you recall, last week it was DiBiase versus Christian, which was a lumberjack match to set up a singles match. That's the first problem here.
That's a minor problem.
A minor problem, but Christian beat DiBiase last week, and Ted got in the ring with his son. And his son ended up shoving Ted. So then this week, Ted comes out with the old $1 million belt, and he talks about how his father was never there for him. He said, one random act of kindness didn't make up for all the lost years and missed football games and that sort of thing. He said that Ted did know better than anyone how to win him over. He thanked him for the trust fund and the belt. It was never explained if Ted Sr. gave him the belt. if he stole the belt, if...
I got the impression he gave him the belt. I think that was... It was never... I think it was sort of hinted that, like, out of... you know, it was like he was trying to be nice to him. It was like a random act of niceness. Gave him the belt.
This was a very confusing segment to me. And then he beat Christian in a parody booking moment of the evening and celebrated with the belt. So I don't know if he's going to defend it every week or what the deal is with this title. But
I think he's going to have that. I think he's going to have that title, and I think that it's going to. He's starting his own group with Brett. And Brett DiBiase and Joe Hennig.
Well, he did say it was good being the Fortunate Son, which...
I think the group's name is going to be the Fortunate Sons.
Well, I mean, Brett DiBiase is a son, too, so is he the Unfortunate Son? How does that work?
No, the Fortunate Sons, they're all Fortunate Sons.
I see.
Yeah, Brett DiBiase, Ted DiBiase, and Joe Hennig.
So that's the name of the stable, the Fortunate Sons.
That was the idea, you know, when that was the idea, you know, I mean, we'll see if it plays out, but yeah, I guess, yeah, that's why Cody got kind of moved out of there.
Because he's a very unfortunate son.
A new heel segment.
We had Jack Swagger versus Orton, not for the title.
I got to say about this booking of this one, it's interesting to me because. Because Randy Orton is regarded as a really good worker, and he usually is. So I don't know if Swagger was off because of something, or I mean, well, Swagger wasn't, you know, was off. I mean, that's no question. But it felt to me watching it that Randy Orton was not very good at carrying someone, you know, because it just felt like he couldn't carry Jack Swagger very well. The match wasn't bad or anything, but Swagger just didn't seem like he was quite there all the time. And the other thing was, you got a guy who is they're trying to move up, so he needs help, because, you know, he needs scripted help because he's already not regarded nearly on the level of Randy Orton. So Randy Orton beats him last week, and then he wins, you know, he backdoors into this title, so he needs a little bit of credibility, being that he's champion. He's probably going to be in a main match on the next pay-per-view. So Randy Orton lays him out at the beginning of the show. That's fine. Then they have the match, and Randy Orton beats him with the RKO.
Yeah. He escaped his finisher, and he beat him with his move.
And Randy Orton is not facing him on the pay-per-view.
If Randy Orton is challenging Jack Swagger for the title on Raw next Monday, then fine.
But they said this was Jack Swagger's last match on Raw.
Exactly. Is that really going to happen? No. Jack Swagger needs all the help he can get. And
the point is, Randy Orton shouldn't have won that match with a DDT. I mean, with an RKO.
He shouldn't have won the match.
No, he shouldn't have won the match at all.
No.
No, I'm not saying Swagger should have won the match, but it should have been something to where Swagger looked on his level. Because in the workings of the match, Swagger really never worked on his level in the actual match. You know, Swagger didn't... As a worker, he didn't look at his level, but that's a completely different deal. You know, I mean, if Randy Orton was a great worker, he would work the match to make the guy look better than he was. He wasn't a great worker in this match, and Swagger wasn't a great worker either. But the thing is that in the scripting of the finish and who looks good and all that stuff, it's like it was imperative that Jack Swagger not be treated like he wasn't at the same level as Randy Orton or the other main eventers, because he's going to be, you know, they're counting on him to do something. So now if he goes out there and people see him still as like a mid-card guy, belt or no belt, I mean, all you've done is weakened your belt. And what good is that?
Then we had Show Miz against Cena and Otunga for the tag titles. And Otunga's noted. God, did he look green in this match.
You know what, though? Cena looked almost as bad as him.
Cena looked like Ric Flair next to this guy.
No, I was watching Cena. Cena's selling sucked.
Yeah.
I was watching him, and I was going like, he looks like he's the rookie. But then Otunga tagged in, and Otunga did look worse.
Yeah. So, the finish, which they never even explained, and even the announcers were asking what the hell was going on, Cena crawls over to make a tag, and Otunga, who wants to win NXT... and had a chance to become one half of the Unified Tag Champions with John Cena, he decides to bail on the guy. And Big Show.
Well, I think the idea was is that he made a secret deal with Batista.
You know, I'll just say this. Finish was Big Show punching out Cena, and then Otunga, and then Batista ran out, beat up Cena, and Otunga had Batista make the announcement that it was going to be Batista versus Cena at Extreme Rules in a last man standing match for the title. And if Otunga had announced that Batista was going to be his new mentor, fine. But what in the hell did Otunga get out of this? Absolutely nothing.
Made a secret deal.
But what did he get out of it?
I don't know.
How does this in any way help him in NXT?
I don't know.
Well, there you go. There you go. So, that was a show. I was not really enamored with this program. But after Impact, this was quite a show.
I thought that both shows, when they were over, were not really anything special. I mean, the Raw show was okay.
It wasn't the best foot forward, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought it was okay, but, you know, really nothing really that special. You know, when you really look back, I mean, were there any good matches? I mean, Orton and Swagger was all right. Sheamus and Kofi was a quick, you know, essentially a squash match, really.
I mean, as far as, like, wrestling goes, I mean, the wrestling on Impact was better, but there was so much stupid stuff on Impact that pretty much, I mean, Raw was just a better show because it was not a terrible show in the same way. But again, both shows left a lot to be desired. I watched the ROH pay-per-view, and you talked about it last night. You reviewed it. I pretty much agree with everything. The one thing I will say is that if there's anything negative to say about that pay-per-view, it's that it's really hard for me to watch almost a four-hour show. I think it was 3.5 hours if you fast-forwarded through the intermission there.
I would have preferred to have fast forward through it, watching it live.
Yeah, you can do it live. That's why I'm kind of glad I got the replay here. But I would have preferred to have watched it in two parts. But I was still, even though I was really, really burned out of a lot of stuff going into the final couple of matches, it was still very clear that Briscoe's and Kings of Wrestling was a really good match, and the main event was a really excellent three-way. And the Navy match, as you mentioned, was very good as well. So, I mean, there was a lot of good wrestling on that ROH show, and may have gone a little bit long. But hey, if you're an ROH fan, you're paying $15 for an online only pay per view, then you're not going to complain about watching a show that long. You'll feel you got your money's worth. So,
I would think if I was there live, I would think it was just a great night.
Yeah, and the people were into it. They got a little tired there as the main event was going on, but I mean they were really into that show pretty much from start to finish.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a couple of news notes here, and then we'll do a couple of email questions before we wrap it up here today. Let us see. UFC did announce that they are doing a head-to-head. It's not a live show, but they're putting the which show are they putting on head-to-head with
UFC 110 against the Strike Force?
That's right. Nogueira.
I don't see that as, you know, I mean, it's just what they always do, but I don't really see that being that big of a deal because, you know, it's not a major UFC show.
No.
I mean, that was a show that, you know, was actually the worst buy rate, you know, well, one of the worst buy rates for a UFC show in years. I don't see that as being that show, you know, really hurting the Strike Force show. The Strike Force show is going to live and die based on, what Dane Henderson and Jake Shields is going to do, and that's kind of scary.
The UFC show is the Nogueira versus Cain Velasquez show with Silva and Michael Bisping on it as well. And
I mean, it was a good show, but yeah. it's just not, you know, marquee names or anything.
Apparently no Bobby Lashley on the Strike Force show.
No. I mean, they were having trouble finding, you know, I don't think they ever submitted an opponent to him. And, even a week or two, like I think even 2 weeks ago, I was pretty much told that, you know, the time was just running out of finding an opponent. I expect Bobby Lashley to fight maybe in June, but I know that he has not been given a date, a time, or an opponent, you know, a date or an opponent at this point, so. It's just that they have two shows They have one show in May, and it's possible he'll be on the May show, but I just have the feeling that they got two shows in June, so, you know, he's got to be on one of those.
All right, let's do a couple of the questions here, and then we'll wrap it up. This person says, I haven't seen any female numbers for TNA ratings in the recent Observers. Do any women watch it?
It's like 30%. You know, it's you know, UFC, TNA, and WWE, when it comes to percentage of women viewing, are all relatively close, even though WWE completely lies about it. WWE's, you know, it can, WWE will range from 30 to 34%. And UFC is 28 to 30%, and TNA is right at 30%. So, you know, that's the numbers.
This person says, with athletes getting bigger and men like Brock Lesnar actually having to cut weight to make 265, is there any thought to a heavier division?
You mean super heavyweight? They already have super heavyweight. It's just the UFC is not going to book anyone because they don't, you know, they don't like the ideas of big, slow, you know, big, slow matches. As far as, you know, changing, adding like a 225, you know, a lot of people have talked about the 225 over the years. Right now, UFC has no interest in it because they're just, in, you know, for such a long time, there was they were having enough trouble getting getting quality heavyweights to begin with. So to add another weight class, they just don't. UFC, at least as of, you know, because I've had this discussion with people in UFC, not in the last 2 months, but I would say pretty lengthy and regular, even up to 3 months ago, and they were pretty adamant about not wanting to add another weight class just because just didn't feel the need for it.
This person says, how did the UFC Fathom HD movie theater deal go, and will they do more UFCs in theaters in the future? I really enjoyed it. Actually, Every person I talked to said it was awesome.
Yeah, I would love to do it. I mean, but, you know, if I wasn't going to a show, I would go and take my wife to the theater to watch that.
Oh, yeah.
rather than get the pay-per-view. Because everyone that I know that went just said it's so much better than watching a pay-per-view at home because you get the giant screens and the better sound, and, you know, you're surrounded with, you know, a lot of people. You know, it depends on the theater. Some were as few as 50, some were as big as 325. Overall, my impression was that it was a mild success. It wasn't an overwhelming success. And I wouldn't be surprised if they... I would think that they'll do it, I don't know, for May 29th or July the 3rd. They're not going to do it. I wouldn't think they would do it until then, though. It won't be like every pay-per-view, but maybe something that you do 2-4 times a year. I mean, I asked Dana White a couple days ago, you know, when the next one would be, and he didn't really seem to know, but I'm guessing that either May 29 or July 3 they'll go with it again.
This person here says, why didn't Ken Shamrock ever get the title in WWE given his initial push in the company? Moreover, do you think he would have been suited for the role even if given as a transitional champion?
You know, they didn't bounce the belt around quite as much as they do now. If he was around now, I think that, because every, you know, hell, Jack Swagger got the belt. You know what I mean? Sheamus got the belt. So he probably would have gotten it if he was around now. But I never thought he was good enough to get the belt. I mean, I know it, as far as was it ever talked about, when Brett, you know, when he was first brought in, you know, this one, Brett, he was brought in when I remember, was Brett champion or was he going to win the title? I'm trying to remember, it's 97. When did Brett won the title from, I guess, the real Bret Hart title run. He was going to win it at Mania, and then they switched it around and they put it on Undertaker, or they put it on Sid. They put it on Sid to lose to Undertaker, and then Undertaker lost to Bret at SummerSlam that year. So Ken was being talked with in early '97 because it was a show in Stockton, and I was at the show, and I'm thinking it's January '97. I was actually at this show, sitting not all that far from Ken and his father, you know, who kind of mentioned that, you know, they were going to go see Bret Hart, and they didn't tell me they were going to go see Bret Hart to try to get into the company, but that's what ended up happening. And at that meeting, you know, because Bret was the impetus in getting him in, you know, Bret's idea was that he thought that, you know, when he got the title, he wanted to lose to Ken and then regain it from Ken and do a program with Ken because he thought that it would give credibility to the championship for Ken to be champion. So that was Bret's idea, but, you know, Bret didn't get the title at Mania like at that point was the plan. Because Vince panicked because at think they were losing in the ratings at that point, right? Because it's 97, yeah, so they were. So Vince panicked, and whenever Vince panics, he goes to the big guy. So he, instead of going with Bret, he went with Sid and Undertaker for a while. We're going to Bret at the wrong time. You know, like, now, and then when he's trying to get rid of Bret, he gives him the world title. That was, you know, which led to Survivor Series. So it all worked out in the end, but it was quite a number of stupid things at the time, if you really look back on it. But, yeah, I don't know. When Ken came in, I mean, and I thought he did pretty well for himself, but it was just one of those things, if you really look at where things were going, when Shawn got the championship, he wouldn't have wanted to lose to Ken. He barely wanted to lose to Austin. And obviously Austin was so much more over. So then you had, at that point, it just never, I don't think it was ever really the right time for Ken to win that championship. You know, I mean, if it was different time, you know, different situation, he could have. You know, if Bret was champion and Bret was going to have a long run, you know, perhaps, and Austin didn't get so hot. You know, a lot of different things could have happened differently. Yeah, he could have, but it didn't happen.
And that's going to do it for today, everybody. But tomorrow, we're going to be back on the show in the afternoon talking the ratings for Raw and Impact. So we'll run down how each show did, some of the notes from the quarter hours, that sort of thing. And we're doing that weekly now. And I don't know for how much longer, to be honest with you. God knows that show could be back on Thursdays pretty much at any time. But we'll talk about that tomorrow. And, of course, tomorrow as well on Figure Four Daily, Zach Gowen is going to be on the show. So that should be something else. That's the plan for the next couple of days. Make sure you check out the front page for more, and we shall talk to you again after a while.